following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wake up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Taking a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action. A lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
Welcome into another edition of Inside Eagle Nation Live, episode number 129 of Inside Eagle Nation, episode right around number 20 of Inside Eagle Nation Live here on Facebook Live. You can join the conversation by commenting here on Facebook Live. You can tweet us at GS Sports Network or text us 912-274-3607. Make sure to get your comments and questions in for the You Pick segment coming up at the end. You get to pick what we talk about the last 10, 15 minutes or however long it goes. But you get to pick it, anything and everything that you would want, we have to talk about. But we'll dive into Georgia Southern Athletics in just a few moments. But as always, Inside Eagle Nation presented by our good friends at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and a great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com. For both commercial and residential customers, their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook, Arcola Septic, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. A busy episode of Inside Eagle Nation. We've got Beyond the Bio with Haley Blitch coming up in just a few moments from Creative Services. We'll talk with Taylor Durham, the voice of the Elon Phoenix. But just getting back from Jonesboro, Arkansas this past week, had a off day, quote-unquote. We made our way over to Memphis before flying out yesterday morning back to Savannah, but a longer trip than we were kind of expecting it turned out to be. Got a doubleheader on Saturday for Georgia Southern. But overall, your thoughts on the trip to Jonesboro?
I'd say it's good to be home, but we're leaving again tomorrow.
Yeah, true.
So,
but this time it's on our own accord. We get to drive ourselves, get to create our own schedules.
Well, we predicted that we were going to eat a lot of pizza. We did.
Yeah, we nailed that one.
We were first-team All-American pizza eaters over the course of the 4 days that we were out there. You know, unfortunately, baseball-wise, it didn't go as well as I thought it would, but give some credit to Arkansas State for pitching probably as well as they have all year, both their starters and their bullpen, and try what the Eagles did on offense. It just didn't seem to work, and I think you're going to run into those weekends. Unfortunate that it's this late in the season, but at the same time, you felt like the approach improved. You didn't feel like that they were just banging their heads against a wall all weekend. Game one, yeah, that was the case after all those fly ball outs, but they started to adapt a little bit. It didn't necessarily cash in with more runs being scored, but I was talking with Brant Freeman about this. If you lose two of three in a weekend, make sure you get the final game because that makes the entire weekend feel a little bit different.
And I think we've talked about that with basketball, the way that the schedule kind of lined up this year. You had back-to-back games on back-to-back days against the same team, and we talked about it a couple of different times where with Georgia Southern's case, how that second game went on Saturday is kind of what you felt like the rest of the weekend went, even though it may not have been.
And there were multiple times where game one was not very good, but then you come back on Saturday, same team, 16 to 18 hours later, and then it's, okay, this is what didn't happen the night before. But this next afternoon or whatever, you found that some shots were dropping. Maybe the press was working. Some of the cuts were a little bit more fluid in the half court. But it was good to see that after especially dropping a game that day and getting shut out for the first time in more than a year, that Georgia Southern was able to pitch as well as they did because they needed to, only getting three runs in the final game of the series. But doing enough, pitching well enough, and that's a lot to do with what Jordan Jackson did, maybe his best start as an Eagle. He had some good ones last year, but I think that might have been his best start as an Eagle. Jay Thompson continued his great streak, and you're running out of things to say about Nick Jones. We're going to have to get a thesaurus in another language to figure out what we're going to say about him. He's coming up on some history the final few weeks of the season, and I hope he gets a chance to achieve it because he's been the best reliever I've seen since I've been here.
What language would be the next one to talk about Nick Jones? I mean, obviously in baseball with the Dominican influence, I guess Spanish would be kind of a put it on a tee.
He has been very fuego this year.
Oh. I like it.
I mean, for a couple years ago for Landon Hughes, we called him El Diablo, called him the Blonde Bomber. They both seem to work simultaneously, and even though we only had him for 2 years, the story for Nick is pretty remarkable, and I think that he has shared a little bit more of that this year because of the kind of season that he's having, and he told this to the team a couple of weeks ago during one of the many road trips that we have been on over the last month. But up until his junior year at Chattahoochee High School, he was a right fielder.
Yeah.
He was a right fielder. All of a sudden, he realized, okay, I could throw a little bit. Comes to Statesboro that first year in 2018. He doesn't even make his debut until late March when Coastal was here. And we thought, okay, we weren't expecting to see Nick Jones at all in 2018. But he comes out, strikes out three guys. You could see the pieces were there. Got a little bit better in 19. Then as the season went on, got really good. He pitched those three shutout innings against Troy in the semifinals that year. Last year started a decent way. He was going to be a guy that was going to be relied on, had last season been a normal season, but now this year, we said it this weekend, I think he's one of the top five relievers in college baseball.
Yeah.
I do.
I think you're right on point with that. We'll get into everything in Jonesboro in a little bit later on this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation, but Georgia Southern men's golf going to be heading to the NCAA Regional. They will be heading to Tallahassee, Florida. Was announced last Wednesday. Next Monday through Wednesday at the Seminole Legacy Golf Club. The field is a tough one, as you would expect in an NCAA regional. You've got Davidson, Florida A&M, Florida State, obviously the host, Georgia, Georgia Tech, Indiana, which kind of threw me for a loop because everything else is kind of regionalized, Kansas, Liberty, LIU, LSU, Ohio State, Southern Cal, which, again, a little bit off in left field, and TCU. Georgia Southern ranked 34th in the country as far as golf stat is concerned.
Trying to put my map together.
Yeah, no kidding. Good grief. But that's the field that Georgia Southern will be going up against down in Tallahassee again next Monday through Wednesday. So we will be on next week for Inside Eagle Nation Live as the tournament is going. We'll get you up to date from golf stat as usual. But another NCAA regional for Carter Collins and Georgia Southern men's golf. And it's kind of become the norm for them, and I know you shouldn't take anything for granted, but the NCAA regionals have kind of been the norm for Georgia Southern men's golf.
And before, you go back just a couple of years when Stephen Fisk was finishing second in the country, was an All-American that year three times. He was Sun Belt Conference Player of the Year. He was the guy that got a lot of the spotlight. It was a good team, but it was him being on the team.
Yeah.
This is a really balanced group. Ben Carr's been great. Jake Maples has been phenomenal. Brett Barron coming back for the extra year. Any guy that goes out has the capability to beat anybody on the course, and I love the fact that as balanced as this team is, I think it sets them up well for a possibility to go even further.
Saw a little bit of a run for Georgia Southern a couple of years ago, made it out to the NCAA Finals when Stephen Fisk was on the team, like you mentioned. But they will be making the short trip. I say short trip, relatively short trip,
yeah,
down to Tallahassee as they'll load up the golf bands next Monday through Wednesday at the Seminole Legacy Golf Club.
That's not the easiest trip to get from here to Tallahassee.
No. You've done it a couple of times doing Florida State games for Westwood, hadn't you?
Yeah, I did the Clemson game down there a couple of years ago. I'd never driven from here to Tallahassee, a couple of roads I'd never heard of. First time I'd ever driven through Valdosta. It was nice to see it. Heard a bunch about it. Didn't see Seth Schumann, but that was okay. But it's not the easiest to get to from here. Granted, you're going to have trouble getting to a lot of places from here. But
my guess is Haley Blitch can tell Carter Collins the most direct route and the best route.
That would make sense. I would ask her over AJ.
Yeah. By a lot.
Yeah.
We'll talk to Haley a little bit later on in this week's edition of Beyond the Bio. But Georgia Southern women's tennis fell in the NCAA regional to number 11 Georgia Tech. 5-0 was the final. But this has been a really historic team for Georgia Southern women's tennis. We talked about it on the selection show last week. Most wins in school history, the first time they had made an NCAA regional. And so you really see the trajectory for this team on the up and up.
And more than 25 years since the last league championship, and that year they didn't get a chance to go to the tournament being in the Southern Conference. a year that they will always remember, considering what Coach McCaffrey had to go through just to get to the season health-wise. He was very candid about how he had to go through COVID-19, but that team to stay together, to put together an 11-match winning streak down the stretch, whatever sport that you're in, you always hear, we want to be playing our best towards the end of the season. They typified that to a T.
No doubt. Won 11 of their last 12, obviously falling in the final one against Georgia Tech, who was number 11 in the country and hosting the regional. But a lot of really good things along the horizon for Georgia Southern women's tennis. Got a little bit of breaking news. I guess it's not breaking anymore, but came out a couple of hours ago that Georgia Southern is going to be going to 100% capacity in all outside sports and really and truly for the immediate future. What that looks like is Georgia Southern baseball, their season finale against UT Arlington will be at 100% capacity. You and I have talked about it really for the last year to 18 months of being able to get back to some sort of normalcy, and I think this is probably one of the bigger steps that we've seen towards that step to normalcy. Obviously, it only affects baseball right now, but that means you're pointed in the right direction for football come fall. For soccer, for all the outdoor sports right now, it's 100% capacity. Obviously, masks are still encouraged around J.I. Clement Stadium this weekend, or rather next weekend when UT Arlington comes to town. But I think this is a really huge step. We've seen Louisiana do it. LSU and Louisiana both had 100% capacity. You can ask Jay Walker about that. But you've seen a couple of places around the country, and it seems like more and more adding to that list.
I'd be curious to see the kind of effect it's going to have going into next weekend, because as of right now, that's a matchup of a team in UT Arlington that's in first in the West, a Georgia Southern team that isn't going to be first in the East. They actually could be down to third if Troy does what it can against Arkansas State, but undoubtedly two teams that are fighting to win their divisions in the final weekend of the regular season. You can't ask for a whole lot more than that. Weather, knock on wood, will be great to see. It's also going to be senior weekend. We'll and chronicle the careers of Parker and Curry and McWhorter once we get to next week. But that gives you even more of a reason to say, hey, this is going to be the final time I see some of these guys. And maybe, just maybe, if the chips fall right, that Georgia Southern baseball can clinch a division championship.
There is no reason that J.I. Clement shouldn't be at 100% capacity. Now that the announcement has been made, there's no reason for Georgia Southern not to show out for this last weekend against UT Arlington, all three games. It'll be Thursday, Friday, and Saturday of next week leading into the conference tournament that starts the following Tuesday. But being able to have all of Eagle Nation, and I go back to the conference tournament championship that we've talked about time and time again, that matchup with Louisiana in the conference tournament here at JI, there's no reason it shouldn't be like that.
But show that's possible.
Yeah.
It should not take a league championship game, a league championship tournament, for people to simply be here. We know that they're there, and maybe the attendance won't grow that much. Maybe I'm naive. I don't know, but the idea that it is lifted or returned to 100% instead of it being, oh, you might be able to get 25 in, maybe 30 if you can get the suites and all that organized. But now that people can hear this, come out here, no restrictions, masks are encouraged, not required. Get outside if it's going to be good weather. This is a good team. This is a really good team. This has a chance to be a special team. And honoring those guys that are going to finish up their careers, they deserve your attention.
Not only do you get to see senior weekend, possibly one of the last times you get to see any of these guys at J.I. Clement Stadium, depending on who decides to take the year of extra year of eligibility. There are guys that took this year as the extra year of eligibility. But some of the most impactful guys for Georgia Southern baseball could be the last time you see them here at J.I. Clement Stadium. And, oh, by the way, there's going to be pretty good implications on this series as far as conference standings are concerned, both for UT Arlington, who's trying to stay atop the Western Division, for Georgia Southern, like you mentioned, trying to fight for that top spot in the East, or at least one of the top two spots.
Didn't mean to slide Matt Anderson. This is his 12th senior year, so he's going to be here. He'll be able to be honored next weekend.
I think Ryan Frederick is coming back for another senior.
Ryan Frederick will come back. They'll frame up another 27. We'll get Craig and Laura Lee back. We'll get them on the field, be able to celebrate them again. The thing about UT Arlington, they've got Louisiana at home this weekend, so there's a chance they could lock up first if they sweep that series. They've swept a couple of home series already this season, but the Cajuns are coming off of a sweep against a North Alabama team that they should have dominated. It's a relatively new Division I transitioning team, but we'll see how confident they are going to the Metroplex this weekend.
Georgia Southern softball had a pretty good weekend up in Atlanta this past weekend, swept the Georgia State Panthers on Thursday. It was a 5-4 victory for Georgia Southern. Friday, a doubleheader sweep. It was an 11-7 victory for Georgia Southern in 8 innings, 9-4 the final in the finale. As Georgia Southern sweeps Georgia State, they have a 6-game conference winning streak going into the conference tournament that starts today. It came out a couple of days ago that Bailey Wilson was named second team All-Sun Belt. The third baseman with a .381 average, 6 home runs, 27 RBIs earlier this year, had a 13-game hitting streak that was 4th longest in school history. But well-deserved honors for Bailey Wilson.
And the team you just took 3 from is the team that you get to play again. You just change the venue. This is single elimination. They'll match up against the Panthers. The winner of that game moves on to play Texas State in the double elimination portion.
And the way that the conference tournament is scheduled, right now you've got the 8-seed Coastal Carolina taking on the 9-seed ULM. Again, today is the play-in round, essentially. So the winner of this will go into the double elimination. Georgia Southern will face Georgia State. The Eagles, the 7-seed. Georgia State, the 10-seed. They will have a 2 o'clock first pitch over from Troy, Alabama. 2 o'clock Eastern, I should say. 1 o'clock local in Troy, Alabama. The winner of the Georgia Southern-Georgia State game will play Texas State tomorrow at 5:30, the first pitch. And the winner of Coastal Carolina and ULM will face Louisiana, the top seed. And I don't envy either one of those, as they will take on the Cajuns tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.
Yeah, pitcher of the year, Summer Ellison, is waiting for somebody on that side of the bracket.
She's probably waiting for a lot of somebody,
yeah,
somebody, I guess.
Yeah.
But Georgia Southern baseball out in Jonesboro, Arkansas this past weekend. We will dive into everything Georgia Southern and the Red Wolves when we continue on this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. But for now, we step aside for some Beyond the Bio with Haley Blitch.
Time now for Beyond the Bio with Colin Lacey.
Welcome back on this week's edition of Beyond the Bio on Inside Eagle Nation, your official podcast for Georgia Southern Athletics, as we step into creative services with the Director of Digital Media Content, Haley Blitch. Haley, appreciate you joining us.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Take us back through your story. You and I have kind of gotten along the last couple of weeks ever since you got to Statesboro right around baseball. You're a big baseball person, but where did your involvement with sports and kind of fascination with baseball kind of start?
So I've always really loved sports. I've known from a young age that is what I wanted to do. I wanted to work in sports. I wasn't the most athletic, so I knew I'd have to work in them and rather than play in them. So I've always been around baseball. My dad played baseball. My stepdad played baseball. Everyone, one of my uncles, my grandparents, I mean, baseball has just been such a big thing in my family, so that's where my love for it comes. But I started working in digital media probably, I would say, in high school, you know, just doing like the casual yearbook thing. But then I started a Twitter account for our high school for all of the sports, and I went to all of the games. I covered every single game as if I was the social media manager, and wow, I'm like 15 doing this. I took it really seriously. The guy who ran the newspaper for sports, he was seeing what I was doing, and I was kind of helping him with newspaper stuff, and so that kind of solidified, like, I know I can do this going on. And then I got to college. I went to Florida State, big Noles fan, and I just started writing because I think that's just like the baseline for everyone and who wants to work in sports media. You need to know how to write. So I did that for a couple years, got back to taking photos, which is like my true love, and just being behind the camera, taking photos, making videos. That is just so fun to me. And then I worked for the Cape Cod League. I worked for FSU baseball, and now I have graduated and I'm here at Georgia Southern, so super fun.
You bring up Florida State baseball, and we're going to get there eventually in any conversation with you, but Florida State baseball has been a big part of your life from an early age. Tell everybody kind of how you got involved with Florida State baseball, kind of got ingrained into the Noles culture.
So it's always been Florida State in my family. It was no doubt that's where I was going to go. It's the only place I ever wanted to. I, like you said, it doesn't matter what conversation, I'm going to bring up Florida State somehow. So I think it was 2011 or 12. My dad was working for the baseball team at FSU and took me to my first game. It was game 2 of Super Regionals. I mean, how lucky do you get to that's your first game? So, and the Noles had won the first one, and then they destroyed Stanford the second game. And when you see a team dogpile and they're going to Omaha, that's, I mean, I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it. So from there on out, I was like, well, of course, want to be at Florida State, but I want to be a part of this baseball program in some way. So then It was my junior year of college. I got an internship with the marketing director, and I just interned with baseball mostly just because I had done some Cape League stuff by then and was doing a lot of media. They were very gracious and took me to a couple of the away games, which was really cool. Got to see UF, a couple other ones, the ACC tournament. And then the next year, my senior year, I actually went up to the SID because I had quit the marketing internship because I wanted to do just baseball for full time. So I went to the SID, I presented a business plan, and I was like, this is everything I want to do. And he was like, checking things, like crossing things off. And then he's just looking at it, and he's like, okay, let's do it. And I was like, what? Like, really? You're going to let me do that? And so from there on out, it was my whole senior year. I was just with the baseball team doing all of their media, taking photos, doing videos, all the Instagram stuff, and just everything that I really love. And I got to do it with the team that I just love the most. So it was really cool. Really sad it got cut short in March of last year. But, you know, things happen for a reason. So I'm just glad that I got to do it for a couple years.
You go from Florida State and then you move to the A-Sun in that conference. Being in a conference office, what did that kind of expose you to that you may not have been a part of before?
So I'm very grateful for my job at the A-Sun because if you look at my resume, it's all baseball, which is fine for some jobs, but I knew that I wanted to take a step like above that. And so I went to the conference level, and the A-Sun was, I mean, it's Division I, great conference. They play big teams, play big schools. It's a lower level D1, but it's still great athletics. So it was great. It was so funny because there was some weeks where, like, Monday, Tuesday, I'm covering women's basketball. Wednesday, Thursday, it's women's soccer or men's soccer or volleyball. Or just because of the way COVID had moved all of our sports to the spring, it didn't matter what day it was, I was covering a different sport. So that really gave me a lot more experience, and I'm thankful that now I can say I've worked for 20 Division I sports instead of just one.
Now, your name's been floated around here at Georgia Southern for a little while now. You and Aaron Soka had talked social media plans for baseball a little while back, but take us through the process of getting to Georgia Southern. What appealed you to Georgia Southern, and what really made your decision?
I said this in my interview with Brian and everyone, my very first interview. They're like, why Georgia Southern? And I honestly, I don't know what it is, but I've always just been very intrigued, I guess is the word, by Georgia Southern. To me, it's just a smaller Tallahassee, and I love the college feel, or the college town feel. That is just where I thrive the best. So I thought it would be really cool. And I think I've told you this before, but the very first regional loss I ever saw for FSU baseball was Georgia Southern in 2014. So to get back here with a team that has regional hopes, it's really cool to see everything come full circle. And I'm really excited to be at Georgia Southern. I think it's a great town, it's a great school, and you know, these teams, they're good teams. These are great teams with even better athletes and better people, and I am very thankful. That's all I can say.
We've been lucky to get to work a little bit side by side the last couple of weeks since you got to Statesboro, and seeing the things that you do, one of the big parts of what you're trying to get across is tell the stories of these student athletes. Where does that passion for kind of telling that story come from?
Yeah, so that's like my bottom line, is I always want to tell the stories. I think every single team is unique in its own way, but when you break it down and you have players that come from all different backgrounds and sometimes different countries, I mean, these are kids, now young adults, that are growing up, going through different things, and they all just have the same love for their sport and for all sports. And it's just, I don't know. I want to know these people. I want to know why. I just want to know why. I heard this on a podcast one time, and it was always ask why. And so now I just do that. And it may be annoying when I'm asking a million questions, but I want to dig deeper. I want to know who the people are. I want to show that, because when you show how much fun and how great these personalities are on any team at Georgia Southern, that brings the people in, because they see that and they want to be a part of that. And that's the same thing that happened for me. I saw that. I want to be a part of it.
All right. Everybody can already tell that you're passionate about what you do, you're passionate about baseball, but why baseball? What makes it so impressive to you? What makes it so ingrained in what you do?
I think it's just the culture. I love the culture of being with baseball teams. I could spend all day at a baseball field. I feel comfortable there. There's nothing that makes me feel out of place. I love it. It is my favorite thing in the whole world. It doesn't matter what team. I mean, of course, I have my favorite teams and professional, college, even just watching my little brother play Little League baseball. That is so much fun to me. And I just love the culture. I love just being around a good group of guys that is there to have fun. And I got really lucky with all the teams I've worked for. They've just been so much fun. And I know the Cape League, it's summer ball, and it may not seem as important, but there's first rounders there. I mean, there's first top picks from the Cape League, and those kids are just out there having fun every day, and that will make you fall in love with any sport just to see that.
Finally, before we let you go, this segment's called Beyond the Bio. Give us something that people seeing you around the baseball diamond may not see, something beyond your bio.
One thing beyond the bio, obviously everyone knows I'm a big baseball fan and a little obnoxious sometimes, but I will say I do have the credentials for it. I've got to work for some really great teams, and even just being here at Georgia Southern too. But one thing that is really cool, I've gotten to interview three current Major League managers. So it's my little humble brag.
All right, who are the three?
It was David Ross with the Cubs and Dave Roberts with the Dodgers and Dusty Baker with the Astros. So it's pretty cool.
Haley, appreciate your time. Appreciate everything that you do getting the story of Georgia Southern out there, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Once again, that's Haley Blitz for Georgia Southern Creative Services, a huge addition to the Georgia Southern Athletic Department. Really ingrained in baseball, especially the last couple of weeks since she got to Statesboro, but it's going to be a huge asset to everybody around Georgia Southern Athletics.
Good thing is that baseball-wise, we've got a lot of stories to tell, especially the one that we kind of outlined earlier with Nick Jones, but the journey that Stephen Curry, Mason McWhorter have had, the journey that Jacob Parker had coming back after nearly having his career ended because of an elbow injury, and a number of other stories with baseball. You're going to hear a lot about football once we get to the fall as a season that sees Georgia Southern tries to go back to a bowl game, of course, try to win a conference championship. But like she mentioned, these are great athletes, these are great people, and there's always a lot more to say than about who they are when they're not wearing blue and white.
Somebody that Georgia Southern Athletic is extremely lucky to have here in Statesboro. But we dive into Georgia Southern baseball this past weekend. It was at Arkansas State in Jonesboro at Kelfield Tomlinson Stadium. Friday, it was a 6-1 victory for Arkansas State. And it was something we touched on a little bit earlier, a lot of fly ball outs, and that's a ballpark that is not conducive for fly ball outs, to say the least.
Yeah, 16 of them in game one, and like Coach Hennon said, a lot of them were lazy fly balls. Some were hit okay. The one that Curry had in the fifth inning, that Jalen DeShazer went back and made an over-the-shoulder catch next to the wall, that kind of summed up what Georgia Southern's offense was in game one. I wasn't overly impressed by Brandon Hudson, the Arkansas State starter, but there's something to the ability of going seven innings and giving up one run. To not have terrific stuff, but to still get outs, pitching to the ballpark, he did what he needed to do, and I think that we knew what was going to come in after that. We had talked about the relievers, Jack Jumper and Colin Stone. Anytime that there's a lead late, you're going to those two. You can act like you don't have anybody else on the roster. It's those two that are going to come in. It's those two that did come in. The last 11 batters of the game got set down, and you know, it wasn't like Arkansas State just bludgeoned Georgia Southern with offense. Tyler Duncan did hit a home run. They were able to manufacture four other runs, but it was the start of a weekend that saw Georgia Southern pitch pretty well.
Yeah.
It's just when they didn't score, they only scored four runs, it just made it look not as good.
And it was something that we talked about during the broadcast of, especially early in the game, and you could even translate it over to game one of the doubleheader on Saturday. Georgia Southern had opportunities, especially early in that game, a couple of different times you had two guys on, but not able to get that clutch two-out hit that Georgia Southern has really seen the last couple of weeks, but weren't able to get that, and that was kind of what did the Eagles in on the first two games of this series.
Yeah, the odd part of it was the Eagles were getting a lot of two-out hits,
yeah.
single, first and third. I think it happened three or four times, but they had one hit all weekend with a runner in scoring position, and even that didn't bring in a run. That was an Austin Thompson single in game three that put runners back on the corners. The only hit that drove in a run all weekend was Thompson's home run in game one. All three of the runs that scored in game three, wild pitch, ground out. So from that standpoint, you're okay, is the offense struggling? What's going on? Are they taking a dip here? The last two games, there were a lot of balls that were hit hard.
Yeah.
And Christian Aban had a terrific weekend. He was 6-for-8 in the doubleheader. He had four more hits in game one of that doubleheader on Saturday. This weekend at Elon, it's a much more hitter-friendly ballpark. having been there in 4 years, I haven't been there since 2014. Get the chance to talk to Taylor Durham here in just a minute. I'm really looking forward to talking to. But I would say that the team is fine.
Yeah.
As hot as they were, winning 14 of 17, you're probably due for a little bit of a dip. But at the same time, you get a chance to get back on track this weekend at a conference.
And after the first two games, I was kind of on the fence of how to take those first two games. We knew that was a graveyard of a ballpark as far as fly balls go. Noah Ledford had the ball that you were talking about. It goes probably 480 feet, it felt like,
he
but
nuked
it gets caught.
It was a nuke, and
right.
It somehow got caught in the right center field area.
Yeah,
somehow.
And so it was a weekend where it seemed like, Aaron Soka said, it seemed like Arkansas State had 48 outfielders, but you also knew that Georgia Southern scored one run through two games, and so you're trying to figure out, okay, is this kind of a dip of the offense like you talked about, or is it just one of those weekends in baseball? And the way that Rodney Hinnon was so calm, and obviously he's not going to get worked up over a whole lot. He's seen more baseball than a lot of people will ever see in their lifetime. But to see how calm he was and just that's the way baseball goes. And then Georgia Southern turns it around in game two of the doubleheader on Saturday. 3-2 the victory for the Georgia Southern Eagles over Arkansas State. And that was a big game in the sense that Georgia Southern came out scoring early, scored two in the top half of the first. Yes, Arkansas State answered in the bottom of the first, but Jordan Jackson was really good after that, got the extra run a couple of innings later, and got that victory 3-2.
Raised his arm slot a little bit. I think it helped his off speed. Surely with 11 strikeouts, it had to help something. He was terrific, and he had to be because it had been – it had been a minute since an Eagle pitcher had gone five innings, and he goes six, strikes out 11. Mentioned that the game-winning RBI was from Noah Ledford in that third inning. But then Jay Thompson comes in, gives up a couple of hits, but Nick Jones follows him, picks up his 14th save. He now has the national lead. He is three away from setting Georgia Southern's single-season record. Eagles are now 18 of 18 saving games this year, and that's 18 of the 28 wins. So that tells you that they've had to be really good in certain situations to close out games. You'd love your dominant victories, and there have been some of those mixed in between. But at the same time, the close games when you have guys like Jones becoming Jay Thompson, Jacob Parker, as good as Griffin Davis has been, Hayden Harris was really good in game one of the doubleheader. You toss in – really, you could throw anybody in out of that bullpen lately that have just found a way to have a role and do what is needed whenever their time has been called.
Georgia Southern takes one game of the weekend against Arkansas State as look ahead to the Elon Phoenix up in Alamance County in Elon, North Carolina, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. I really like what Georgia Southern was able to do, and a part of it was tonight's game that was supposed to be against Kennesaw State got canceled a couple of weeks ago because Kennesaw State didn't want to risk having a COVID outbreak right leading into their conference tournament, and they wouldn't be able to play their conference tournament. But it seems like you move up this game Thursday, Friday, Saturday. We already mentioned it with UT Arlington. That's going to be a Thursday, Friday, Saturday the following week here at J.I. Clement Stadium. But just kind of the overall thoughts of what this Thursday, Friday, Saturday looks like for Georgia Southern while we get Taylor on the phone.
It does take you a day away in terms of getting your pitchers ready, but with guys that haven't gone their full allotment the last couple of weeks, I don't think taking the day away is going to be that much of a concern. You need to see a bounce-back effort from Tyler Owens. He took just his second career loss in game one against Arkansas State. He was 15-1 going to Jonesboro, and it wasn't like he was bad. He did give up the home run, but when Georgia Southern couldn't do anything with Hudson, and then with Chase Dolander, we know he hasn't been good on the road this season, but a step in the right direction in some ways. His fastball looked good. He started to show some improvement with his slider. He did walk a couple of guys. It looked like he was trying to overthrow a little bit once he got to two strikes. It's tough to get the bat out against him, but if you do, the odds of an extra base hit are higher because he throws so hard. If you can simply get the bat there and the ball finds it, it's probably going to fly like it did on Ben Klotz's home run. And then it sets you up a little bit better for the week after because the final conference series is the one that you really need. Look, you need Elon to get your wins up, but at the same time, I'd be okay sacrificing a day for this series so you can be in full rest, full rhythm going into Arlington the following weekend.
Had to be joined by the voice of the Elon Phoenix now, Taylor Durham on the phone. Taylor, appreciate you joining us.
Thanks for asking.
Give us kind of a overall of what this Elon baseball team is all about. 17-18, the overall mark, 8-7 in conference play, but what does Elon Phoenix really look like?
Well, I think right now it's a ball club that's playing maybe as well as it's played all year. A 5-2 win last Saturday night in Winston and kind of a herky-jerky schedule. Supposed to go on Sunday afternoon, wound up going on Saturday night because the Deeks had an opportunity to grab a doubleheader on Sunday with Belmont. But it's an Elon ball club that made some lineup changes, moved a true freshman into the leadoff spot about 6-7 weeks back, and has really kind of invigorated the lineup. They've gotten great play. Aya Discerni and Gallison have been great in that 3-4 spot. And then they've also started to figure out the weekend rotation. Edgington has been fantastic in the Friday night role, and then Savino, and then it's kind of been a mix and match deal in that third starter role. This is a weekend rotation, guys, that has really kind of had to sort of rebuild itself. Having lost two guys at different points during the year in Jared Weatherby, who was the projected Friday night guy, who had been the Sunday guy with Berno and Kirby, who are both now in the major league system. And then Spencer Bauer has been a guy who has not pitched the last two weekends. They don't anticipate him being available this weekend. But Bauer was a Friday night guy, was a Saturday guy. And they've really just kind of had to mix and match things. And the staff and Coach Kennedy have done an incredible job, at least to get them to 17-18. And in the topsy-turvy CAA, it's a little bit now of just sitting on the sidelines and watching other teams.
Taylor, it's Danny. It's been a long time, man. It's really good to hear your voice.
Danny, thanks, man. Yours as well.
Real quick, with the move that you guys made to the Colonial a couple of years ago, of course, Georgia Southern and me being at the Citadel, I remember how those Elon teams were during that great run of the mid-2000s and going into the early 2010s. How would you classify the way that Kennedy's teams have been since moving to the Colonial?
I would tell you, Danny, that I think they've been really good. I think they've been buoyed by weekend starting pitching. Obviously, when you have two guys who were as high up in the strikeout list as Kyle Brnovich and George Kirby, you're going to have that. They've also had really good work out of the bullpen. Ty Adcock, who's also in the farm system of the Mariners. But then you look at offensively, and a guy like Nick Zamborelli, who played in the minors for a while, and Cam Devaney, Joe Satterfield, who's taking that super senior year right now with the Gamecocks. It's been guys that have had key moments at key times. And I think the thing about this ball club is that you've had younger guys who played 17, 18 games last year, who played 16, 17 games last year, rather, before the pandemic and before everything being turned upside down. You've had those guys who have stepped into roles, Alex Aya Discerni being the main guy who you saw flashes last year during a true freshman year, and boy, he has just been gangbusters from the start.
Taylor, you mentioned Brian Edgington in that weekend rotation for Elon, 2-3 with a 3.54 ERA, but the number that kind of stands out to me is the one complete game that he has. The fact that you don't see a complete game a whole lot, especially in college baseball now, what is it that he's really brought to the table for this team?
Well, you and Danny will both know Coach Kennedy, and Coach Kennedy said after the ball game that Sunday that they had not planned to send him out for the ninth, and got to a point where everything just kind of worked out to be able to send him back out. And he went back out, completely embraced it, struck out the final batter that he faced, struck out 12 on the afternoon. And I think, Colin, the thing that jumps out is just the control aspect. He's really embraced being in this role. And, you know, guys, we talk about it often, college baseball and Friday night starters are a different breed in terms of embracing the role and embracing the opportunity to be able to lead off a weekend. And you got to have one of those guys. You also got to have one of the guys on the back end, and Joe Sprake has been that guy on the back end with six wins and a 6-0 mark. But, it, you know, I think Brian's done a really good job the control-wise. I thought he was good Saturday night. Elon kind of used Saturday night against Wake Forest as a little bit of a midweek, having played one time in 12 days thanks to Mother Nature last Tuesday night in Raleigh. They wanted to be able to rest guys, because that's the thing that I think has been lost in the shuffle on all of this, not only with Elon, but with Georgia Southern, with whomever, is that there's a lot of guys who are freshmen and redshirt freshmen who last year didn't get the opportunity to get stretched out. And so they really haven't had a full year in 2 years. And you've got a lot of guys that were high school seniors who have probably gotten to the 1st of May and are a little bit worn out. And so the 12-day break, while unique, while different, comes at an interesting time, and we'll see where everything stands on Thursday night.
You've talked about kind of the crazy schedule in the CAA this year. The last time you faced a CAA opponent was when the calendar turned from April to May, that weekend against Charleston. And then last weekend you had Wake Forest, like you talked about. It's weird to go 2 weeks without seeing a conference opponent. Take us through kind of how that came to be.
Well, two things. First off, Elon was supposed to see James Madison early in the year, and the COVID protocols in Harrisonburg struck not only the football program, but also the baseball program and a couple of other programs as well. And then trying to get everything sorted out. That's been the most unique aspect of, I think, this year, is from the scheduling side of things. Whether it's baseball, whether it's football, whether it's men's and women's basketball, whatever it may be. Elon basketball on the men's side played a grand total of 2 home games from December 19th until the end of the regular season. Right. Thank you. And so the scheduling side of things works out in an interesting way. And Elon had a weekend built the 7th, 8th, and 9th, and that weekend was kind of utilized for several different opportunities, and it just so happened that the one opportunity that was available was the single game with Wake Forest. And, of course, around these parts, an ACC game normally means a midweek. Well, Elon was headed to Raleigh last Tuesday night to play State. Mother Nature had different ideas about a 5-hour window of nothing but rain and lightning and thunder. And then State actually had the off weekend last weekend because it's finals on the campus in Raleigh, or beginning finals, and so it wasn't going to work out to play last weekend. And so Elon has had this one game in 12-day window, but the thing that's worked out is that they've been able to rest guys, and they've been able to try to get guys healthy and get guys back into the loop. And hopefully you'll see a rested and healthy ball club come Thursday night. And then, of course, leading into the final weekend of the regular season and the 3 games down in Charleston. Elon right now is watching a lot of scoreboards and trying to figure out where everything stands and the way that the league is putting together their postseason.
All right, our schools have a lot of history, though they haven't been playing each other for all that long. I want you to give me an Elon Georgia Southern memory that does not include Jack Eisenbarger.
2013, Greenville, South Carolina, Floor Field. Sebastian Gomez makes a catch in center. And Elon goes to play Citadel on Sunday afternoon and winds up winning the Southern Conference Tournament and winds up going to Charlottesville.
I think Danny kind of set that one up because he was at the Citadel at the time.
Yeah. That's okay. I understand. I'll go where I'm led sometimes.
I didn't know that you would go that route. I thought that you might bring up maybe Millett or maybe Hudgens or Scott Riddle or one of the great football games the twos played.
I remember 09 and playing football in the rain because it was the first time I had the opportunity to meet the mayor in Terry Harvin. But I will also remember that ball game because Elon had been pretty good in the non-conference schedule. It had beaten Davidson, had beaten Presbyterian, and had lost in Winston to Wake Forest. And I remember that afternoon not only for the fact that it was in the rain and Ryan Chambers was on the sideline, but I remember that afternoon for realizing that, hey, we may be pretty good defensively, because that was as good of a defensive outing as we'd had in four games. And so I remember leaving that ball game thinking, you know, this ball club is going to score points. And Riddle and Hudgens and Millett was a freshman. I know that's hard to believe. But Millett was a freshman, Lance Camp, Sean Jeffcoat. I thought, you know, this crowd's going to score points. But defensively, that afternoon, guys like Andre Campbell and Brandon Ward became guys that we got to know on a game-by-game basis.
I know the atmospheres have been kind of down this year with all the COVID restrictions and whatnot, but Georgia Southern hasn't been up to Latham Park since 2017. What can Eagle Nation expect from the Latham Park contingency?
Well, I think it is an interesting dynamic this year because it's a limited attendance. It's students, it's faculty, it's staff, and it's the parents of the student athletes. So it's a smaller crowd, but it is a crowd that is it's a crowd that certainly has witness some pretty good baseball. Anytime you sweep William and Mary and then you win weekends against UNCW in Charleston, it's you're playing well at home. And that's been the key in all of this, guys. Danny asked earlier about the move to the CAA, and that's really been the key out. I want to tell you that the number right now is somewhere in the midst of 29 of the last 34 league weekend games at home they've won. And so obviously this will be a non-conference weekend, but they've been pretty good on late spring weekends, and the hope is that that can move forward. But obviously knowing, much like you guys were talking about earlier, this weekend being a non-conference weekend and Georgia Southern has matters at hand next weekend, and certainly Elon does as well with Charleston down there, and especially based on how things may play out this weekend with Charleston at UNCW.
Taylor, really appreciate you jumping on with us today. Looking forward to seeing you this weekend, and we'll talk whenever we get to Elon.
Sounds great, guys. Thanks.
Once again, that's Taylor Durham, the voice of the Elon Phoenix. Always has good stories, always loves to talk about the Governor Terry Harvin, and it's not a Taylor Durham conversation unless you're talking about Aaron Millett and some of those Elon greats.
Yeah, I was hoping he misspoke because I always heard that he called him the governor because he called him just the mayor right there.
I think he's any kind of politician.
Because he always had the blazer. He always wore the Georgia Southern Radio Network blazer.
Right.
Because I remember that from days that I was at the Citadel.
Yeah.
I really did think that he would bring up the 13 thing. It made sense, and granted, it does tie it all together. But the funny thing about him bringing up the 09 football game up there, that's – I'm not trying to get people riled up here, so calm down. That's the last time that Georgia Southern football wore blue pants.
Georgia Southern baseball will be at Elon this weekend, a Thursday, Friday, Saturday affair.
12 years.
6 o'clock, the first pitch from Latham Park in Elon, North Carolina, Alamance County. 4 o'clock, the first pitch on Friday, and then 1 o'clock for the series finale on Saturday. Really looking forward to seeing this Elon team. Again, knew them from the Southern Conference days, guys like Taylor Durham. See if we can find Chris Rash somewhere up there to talk about some Ryan Chambers stories.
There's a lot of those.
Yeah, there's
a lot of those.
We get to see some really good people this weekend against Elon, and this is one that Georgia Southern, there may still be a glimmer of hope as far as a at-large for after the Sun Belt Conference tournament to try to get into the NCAA, and these are three big games. If you're able to go up there and sweep, I think it gets you back into the discussion for an at-large because road games mean a lot more as far as RPI is concerned, and we can talk about how much RPI really plays into what an at-large looks like this year, but it can't hurt you to go up there and do well against Elon on the road.
Yeah, I know their record says 17-18, but 13-8 at home. They've won six of their last eight games since they got swept by a William & Mary team that went into that weekend 6-18. So I think that they've figured some things out. I think they're a solid team. I think they're better than that record is. I know what Bill Parcells always said, you are what your record says you are. Aya DeCernia's numbers are outstanding, more walks than strikeouts. The pitching, he talked about Edgington, Savino now in the weekend rotation after he began is more of that long relief out of the bullpen. Sprague has four saves. They've won six of their 17 games by walk-off this season. Now, they've blown their fair share of leads. That was early in the season, though. I think they had six multi-run leads blown within the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season. But they've walked off six times, and they've only played 35 games because they lost all those games with James Madison. They lost a game with NC State, with the Colonial having all kinds of COVID issues. I think they're better than those numbers are, and I think that this is a tough task for Georgia Southern, but I know that those guys are going to be motivated after they felt like maybe last weekend got away from them.
Again, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday for the final 2 weeks of the regular season. This weekend, it's up at Latham Park in Alamance County. Thursday, a 6 o'clock first pitch for Georgia Southern and Elon. Friday, a 4 o'clock first pitch, and then 1 o'clock for the series finale on Sunday. Got a question coming in on the Facebook live stream.
We got our U pick, too.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Okay.
This isn't a U pick,
okay.
But it's just a question.
Hi, Chaz.
Chaz Williams says, does GSU still recruit athletes to play two sports like football and baseball? And it's a conversation you and I have had with head coach Rodney Hennen. We've even talked about it with Mark Byington at times when he was with Georgia Southern men's basketball. Of do you look for two-sport athletes? And I think Coach Hennen has told us before that you don't necessarily are bringing them to Georgia Southern to play both sports, but he really likes guys that play multiple sports and play multiple sports well.
Just think a couple of years ago, Seth Schumann.
Right.
Came in playing football, decided that baseball was going to be his better career path. He made the right choice. He's off to a great start in 21. And remember, Rashad Byrd tingled with the idea of playing baseball, but there wasn't a roster spot. Georgia Southern had a full roster at that point. He was taking some hacks down here, I want to say 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And hitting the ball harder than anybody else, and that's having not played in a couple of years. He was going to be a top 10 round pick out of North Augusta, but that's when he hurt his shoulder and decided that he was going to play football the rest of the way. It's easy to think back 20 years or so when you've got guys like Wilando Ficklin, J.R. Revere, Trey Hunter, guys that played football, baseball. And going way back to the NAIA days, remember E.G. Maybaum, who we brought up a number of times, was a basketball and baseball player. A lot of guys had to play two sports just because you didn't have that many guys on campus, and the fact that they still were as good as they were nationally was that much more impressive.
And I think the reason you don't see it as often as you used to is now you're getting into more of everybody thinks they have to be specialized.
Yeah.
Across the country, when you get to youth sports, everybody thinks they've got to be specialized. You got to play baseball year-round. You got to play football year-round. You got to play basketball year-round. Soccer, same deal. But I think a lot of times you'll see guys that played football in high school that are on the baseball team, that played baseball in high school on the football team. And I think that's more of just something to stay in shape. You're not necessarily fully locked into it, but I think it's just the specialization that you see at such a young age now that you didn't even 10, 15 years ago that has really kind of had that divide where you don't see very many two-sport athletes anymore.
There are still two things that a lot of college coaches are looking for two things. Did you play more than one sport? Did you have success in those sports? With specialization, you're more than likely going to lead to burnout, and you hate that that comes up, but it does. Too much too soon can mentally and psychologically ruin what you would like to do with that sport down the line. And then coaches also look for, did you have leadership roles on those teams? Were you a captain? Were you part of a leadership council, something like that? Do you have that kind of experience where you can come in right away and not be one of the most important guys on the team per se, but be someone that can get into those roles eventually and maybe take on some leadership despite not having a whole lot of collegiate experience?
I think Seth Schumann kind of embodies what you just talked about.
Absolutely.
When he came to Georgia Southern, he was a quarterback. Started the game against Louisiana. And then, which coincidentally enough, his best start may have been against Louisiana on the road.
That freshman year, that's right.
But he came in, he wasn't on the weekend. He couldn't play on the weekend because he had spring football. And so on the weekends, he was in Statesboro strapping on the football pads over at Eagle Creek. But he comes in on the midweek. Yeah, he did that.
Well, maybe not like that.
Well, no,
a little bit better than that. Yeah, a little bit better.
He comes in on the midweek and dominates. Once spring football's over, he moves to the weekend, and he's ready to rock and roll. And I think that made the decision to kind of stick with baseball. But it's the fact that he came in as a midweek guy, maybe a bullpen guy. You didn't really know what you were going to get out of Seth Schumann. But he turned into what everybody called the franchise.
Yeah, for that not being a U-pick, that's a pretty good U-pick.
It is.
That's
and
a really
good. I guess it could have been, but we had one, and I didn't think it was going to lead to that.
What's our U-pick?
Our U-pick comes from Haley Blitch. Best food place on the road trip.
Which road trip?
I think this is just an all-encompassing, our favorite meal on the road.
Whew.
Confirmation, it is everything. I've got mine, if you need a moment to ponder your thoughts.
You already have one?
Yeah.
Okay.
This has been mine for, I guess, since 2014.
Okay.
And we thought we were going to be able to get back there this weekend, but
okay.
It's about an hour away.
Okay.
Which is one of the saddest things I think I've ever been a part of. But the Angus Barn up in Raleigh, North Carolina, absolutely fantastic steak. Now, I know we've talked about the butcher shop out in Little Rock, which I didn't think we were going to find a great steak out in Little Rock, Arkansas. We did. But the Angus Barn.
We did.
Yeah, we did. But the Angus Barn up in Raleigh, when we went up to play NC State, and Chambers and Blair had talked about it for like the week leading up, and they don't normally steer you wrong with food either. And so I was like, okay, this is going to be good. It was out of this world.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
All right. I'll keep it there just because that makes me think about this.
Uh-oh.
Same kind of vein. Start of 2017 football.
Ooh.
Not just the best. This was one of the best nights that we had as a crew.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun that night.
The atmosphere, the food, the conversation, the wait staff, Hunter's Pub in Hamilton was that might be the best night that our crew has spent together.
If you're ever going over towards the Auburn area, there's a place in Hamilton, Georgia, and I promise you your GPS is not taking you off the edge of a cliff. It's out in the middle of nowhere, but it's called Hunter's Pub.
There's no sign.
No, there's not.
You just have to rely on your GPS being good.
Trust the GPS. I promise it's worth it. But you go inside, and they've got paper menus. They got us to sign one, and they put us on the wall right up next to Jeff Foxworthy. And I don't know what that says about him.
Yeah.
That was really good steak, really good everything.
If you sign a paper menu in a steak restaurant, you might be right.
I don't think that's his next one.
That is either. The steak was awesome. It probably had more butter than was allowed for cholesterol's sake, but peanut butter pie was...
Oh, I forgot about the peanut butter pie.
Now, the game didn't go well, but that meal, all of us there to start that season, that was really, really good.
Yeah, that one was good, too. Daryl Lynn said she expected you to say Black's Barbecue. Black's is up there. Black's is in the discussion. It's receiving votes.
Yeah.
But I don't know that it's not the top.
I can't speak to Angus Barn because that was before I got here, and I know that you guys have talked about it. No, I've heard about
it.
Wow. No. Just haven't. I've only been to Raleigh.
I've been somewhere to eat that you haven't?
Well, I've only been to Raleigh twice, and I didn't know about it either time.
That's fantastic.
Hunter's Pub, we were both there for. Black's is really good, but we've been there multiple times.
Yeah.
I think the fact that we've only been to Hunter's Pub once, and that's all we have to go on,
right,
is because I think we've been to Black's 3 or 4 times, and it is phenomenal. But Hunter's Pub is almost like this mythical thing out there that almost doesn't exist because it was so good.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty fantastic. But that'll wrap up this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. That was a good you pick by Haley. But that'll wrap up this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation, episode number 129. We'll be back next week as we dive into Georgia Southern men's golf. They'll be at the Tallahassee Regional. And we will hopefully talk about a pretty good weekend up in Alamance County against the Elon Phoenix for Georgia Southern baseball. Until next week, for the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.